Ah, hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on episode 225, I was very lucky to have Jamie Scherning on the podcast. She is an author, speaker, clothes designer. She is a cancer survivor and a drag queen ambassador. We talked about many things, how she got involved in the world of drag. Basically how she started her clothing line, the trials and tribulations of creating her book, as well as the fight against the big C, cancer itself, and some of the things she's grateful for in this world. All in all, it was a good conversation. I enjoyed myself and I look forward to having her back on the podcast. So please sit back, relax, enjoy the show, and I look forward to speaking to you soon, people. Peace. Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on episode 225, I'm very lucky, privileged to have Jamie Scherling on the podcast today. She is a author, speaker, clothes designer, survivor, and drag queen ambassador as well. Hey, how are you today, m'lady? How are you?
I'm doing so well. Your energy is infectious. I love it. I'm here for it.
Oh, I'm glad you're here for it. And like, you know what? I gave you props for your sparkly jacket before, but I'm gonna give them to you again.
Thank you so much. I heard someone, or maybe I said this. Life is better with sparkles.
Life is better with sparkles. Like, you know what? Like, if it, like, with my snacking self, I always say life is better with sprinkles. I can't be helped. Can't help it at all. But did you design that jacket yourself, or is it yours?
I did not. So this was a gift, actually, from the very first drag queen who I became friends with. And they were cleaning out their drag closet and said, here, have this jacket. And I happily took it.
That's something I did not expect to hear today. Cleaning out a drag, cleaning out my drag closet. That is definitely a line. I was like, what? Cleaning out your drag closet?
Mm-hmm.
So tell me this. Now, I have to ask, you have many accolades to your name. Author, speaker, clothes designer, survivor. How did you become a drag ambassador, a drag queen ambassador? How does one become one of these?
Well, I don't know how it would work for other people, but I can tell you how it worked for me. So I came into the drag scene in a very, I think, untraditional way, in that I became friends with people who just so happened to do drag. So my friend Josh, I met through doing a musical together. Josh was the choreographer. I was in the musical. We became friends, and then Josh asked, will you be a backup dancer for Beverly B, Josh's drag persona? So I was already friends with this human, a male presenting human, who then I found out, you do drag. And then I met three more people the same exact way, three other people who were backup dancers with me. So I know that is not usually the case. I think most people, they go to a drag show and they see the person in drag during the performance, and it's great. Whereas I became friends with some of these people, and it just was this thought of, these are my friends, and this is something they do.
I see. This is the thing. How can I put it? There are sort of worlds which you see it. It's very public, but you don't actually know a lot about it, because when you get some people RuPaul's drag show, if you get what I mean. Is it drag show or road show? I can't.
Race. RuPaul's Drag Race.
There you go. You get one side of it, but you don't get the whole sort of picture, if you get what I mean. So you just sort of get this public face. And because of drag, the nature of the beast, as they say, is all performance. And not so much you don't get the sort of behind the scenes, what these people's lives are truly about,
Mm-hmm. So true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, I imagine like, okay, you getting into this, like how did like it's like going from one performance to another, and then you were like, okay, I'm so heavily involved now, I have to speak for the drag community. Is that a thing?
So Kate, when I went to that first drag show, I had never actually seen an episode of RuPaul's Drag Race. I knew that drag existed, but I just hadn't had any exposure. So I was this preparing to be a backup dancer. We had all these rehearsals. I got to be friends with these people. And then I went to my first show weeks before I actually performed in a drag show pageant. And the first show I went to, I thought, this is amazing. Where has this been my whole life? For me, it was like watching mini musicals all night because you have these people in costumes, really costumes and wigs, makeup, and there are many different kinds of drag, but the kind that I saw was somebody singing, basically lip syncing to a song. Some very theatrical, some fun, some ballads. So it was just, oh, this is musicals, and I love musicals.
Ah, excellent. So, like, this is the thing, like, from performing, like, what did that lead you on to next? Because, like, this is like, because it's like, okay, how did you sort of like end up being a performer? Because it just kind of like goes, yes, okay, I'm a performer, and now, yes, a drag queen ambassador. How did you get there?
Being at the shows as often as I was. So it started out that I just knew these few people, so I would follow them. So if Chaos was hosting a show, I'd go. If Lucy or Amelie, so I would go to their shows. So I kind of was going periodically, but then you get to be friends with other people in the audience, and it just snowballed to all of a sudden one week I thought, oh, did I go to four drag shows this week? Yes, I did. And so it just happens. Here we are, and I'm there 4 nights of my week, having a great time, being around all these wonderful people, so much joy, so much fun, which I really needed in my life at that time. That then I became the ambassador by saying, everybody should know drag. Everybody should come to these shows. If this isn't in your life, why not?
And you say you needed it at that time in your life. What brought on that need?
When I first started going, I really just needed even more fun time. But then, as time went on, I was diagnosed with cancer and went through treatment. And during that time were some really low moments in my life. And having that community there for me at that time, I'm not sure how I would have, I mean, I feel like I would have gotten through that time. I would have somehow probably survived, but I don't know if I would have gotten through it as well as if I hadn't had that community behind me.
Right, I see. Like, this is the thing, like, having that sort of sense of community, that's like, did it's like I kind of like, oh yeah, what about family members? Didn't they sort of step in and support as well? Or like, it was a case of, did they just like the drag community offered some like different perspective of what you were going through?
So I live fairly, I mean, it's all relative, but I feel like fairly far from my biological family, meaning my family of origin. So I'm in the Midwest in the United States. I'm in Wisconsin, but I grew up on the East Coast. So my parents are in New York. I have siblings in Florida and North Carolina and Indiana. So there wasn't that ease of let me just pop by, let me help. And I understood that. I mean, I knew where I lived and I knew where they lived. So I don't fault them for that. I know everybody's journey is different, and some people will have family member there all the time. I didn't have that. I have two teenagers now, so I had my children, but that's different because I actually worked really hard to not lean on my children because I didn't think that's fair to them. So
Yeah, no, I hear you. I hear you because, like, I can imagine, like, with what was going on with regards to your fight against the big C, and like, you know what I mean, like putting that sort of pressure on your kids, I can totally understand and get where you're coming from with that. Like, but it must have been kind of like trippy for them at one point. That's like, oh, okay, we're like, mom's heavily invested, like, well, involved in this like new community, which I don't know if they knew anything about drag beforehand or if they had the same amount of knowledge as you did at the time you were introduced to it.
They did. They had similar knowledge. So I have two, and my older had been, I think the first time exposed to drag was with me. We went to drag brunch, and drag brunch is a lot of fun. So yes, you, and I've seen drag brunch done many different ways, but the one we went to, you go in, you order your food. The wait staff is still the wait staff from the restaurant, but then while you're eating, various performers will come out and maybe one at a time do a number, basically walking around, singing, lip syncing, performing while you eat. And my, so that teenager, the older one, had been in musicals. So I think there was an easy transition to like it for the similar reason that I liked it. And then my younger has been to a, maybe two or three shows. Not his thing. He doesn't disrespect it or say anything bad about it. He would just prefer to watch sports all the time. So it's just not his thing. But he knows that the people are important to me. He knows that it's this great activity. So they have different perspectives, the two of them.
I hear you. I hear you. But like, this is the thing. As long as those perspectives are like, like, how can I say, respectful, and like, you know, they understand where it's coming from, where it has helped you along the way. That is also a great thing. Now, I have to say, when you said drag, like drag brunch, all like, all what came in my mind was like, a very sassy time, just with lots of like guys in drag just sitting around, just having mimosas and like, like basically Bucks Fizzes, just getting loud and rowdy. I don't know.
That can happen too.
Oh, brilliant. So with this, like, yes, the cancer, like getting into drag community and everything like this, was it a case of you were a clothes designer before and then you got into it, or were you a clothes designer after?
I would say really almost during. So I was not a clothing designer before. I have no background in the fashion industry. I don't know how to sew at all. I still don't. But you can be a designer without knowing how to sew, I have learned. So I had had my surgery. I had chemotherapy and radiation, and the radiation really affected my skin in that it was really hard to wear certain clothing. So I was just wearing just big baggy shirts and it worked. And then I wanted to wear some of my older clothes, but they didn't fit me the way they used to. I mean, women's clothes are made for mostly a specific body. So I was finding that the clothes I wanted to wear that I had in my closet didn't work. And so I did some searches online and thinking, well, where's the clothing line? It doesn't exist until mine. So I had this harebrained idea to think, well, I'll just do it. So I worked with a number of people, a number of really wonderful people in the Madison, Wisconsin area, and learned a lot and worked with a dear friend who made the prototype, then worked with a pattern maker. And that's how the clothing line became to be.
What is the clothing line called?
It's called YDY Suites. And the YDY stands for You Do You.
You do you.
You do you, sweets. Because that's really what my line is all about, that you do what's best for you. Because in this very small, it is a very small market, and I knew that. There are some women who wear the clothes they had before. Great. There are some that have their clothes altered. Great. There are some that wear prosthetics and other clothes. All great options. But if you maybe want something that's created just for you, want something that's designed with this market in mind, you do you and come find my clothes.
Because like, if I remember doing my research, you had breast cancer. Was that correct?
Correct.
And you elected not to have reconstruction. Is that correct?
Exactly. Yes. And that's why much of my clothing didn't fit the way it used to.
Because like, this is the thing with regards to like, when it comes to sort of like cancer, and especially when it's like sort of breast cancer, it's like, yes. When it comes to breasts, it's one of the sort of key sort of markers for many women, like where they sort of like, oh yes, this is what proves that I am a woman. This is my womanhood. And I would say also it comes down to sometimes hair as well. But like, it's like when, if you like, and with cancer, And with breast cancer, which can take, yes, your breasts away, and it can affect your hair as well, depending on what type of treatment you're having, it must have been a real sort of challenge to really sort of like go, this is my identity. This is who I am. Was that some also another reason why you sort of like took up the designing mantle?
I think so, yeah, because I still wanted to feel feminine. I know many women in the same circumstance as me, and I'm grateful that to hear that a lot of them say, I'm still feminine. I'm still a woman. This body part does not define me. And for some, they might wear clothing that maybe their scars show and they don't mind. Great. You do. That's awesome. But for me, I didn't want that. I felt like my scars were mine to share. You know, if I wore something very a low cut or something with a deep cut underneath my armpits, you might see my scars. And I feel like that's my story to tell. And so I don't want my story told by my clothing that in my mind doesn't fit me. So, but I definitely still feel like, well, I am still a woman. I still identify as a woman. I have for how many years now? I still do.
Like this is a thing. It's one of those things which I always find, how can I put it, fascinating about this sometimes the human condition. It's like when you know, and or if you're having a real sort of close brush with like, yeah, this might be my final moments, all of a sudden, like new aspects and possibilities for like a new direction in life like comes out. And like I became a clothes designer after, like, it's like, okay, like, yeah, this person must have been living in you all this time, and now it's like being activated. That, are you surprised at that yourself?
I am, mostly because I didn't know how to sew and I didn't have this background. So I'm thinking, how would I ever imagine that I'm a clothing designer when I've never used a sewing machine in my life? I can barely sew on a button. But getting to have the discussions with some really wise people in the community, learning things that, and I don't know any names, somebody could do a search after online after this call, but there are clothing designers, some very big names, very prominent, who also don't know how to sew, and just learning things. Oh, so you don't, busting those preconceived notions. I have liked fashion for a long time, so I guess it isn't completely a surprise, but the idea that I would be behind it was a surprise.
Like with regards to surprises, like, okay, like, would, like, putting the sort of designer aside to one moment, did you think, okay, a book lived within you to like, yeah, go, hey, you know what, bam, I have a book what lives within me, which I can like put out there in the world? Because it's just like, it's, you got one life as a drag queen ambassador. You've got another life as a designer. You've got another life as an author. And you've got the other life as a speaker. It's like, hey, you are like most probably one of the most living people out there right now.
Well, you know, every day I think, well, I'm still here. I'm still here. So let's do something. And no, to answer your question about the book, no, I think I liked the idea of it, and maybe it had rolled around way in the far corners of my brain, but then just realized that I had a story to tell, and it became more so over time. You know, the first I was just writing little scribblings of ideas, didn't think much of it. It was really very cathartic to write what I did. And then it wasn't very good, I will say. My book was not that great. And then I hired an editor, and the editor made it a lot better. So I am very grateful. Thank you, Lori, for helping me. So Lori made my book a lot better. And then I still really wasn't sure, because you think, being a memoir, especially, it's my life. So it's different than writing, I would think, a fictional work where everything is made up and maybe there's some basis of truth, but this is true story. These are the things that happened in my life. And I shared the book with some people before it was published, and their response made me want to keep going to publish it, because I actually almost didn't publish it. It could have just stayed on a flash drive.
Yeah. So like, you know what, with like doing a memoir, like What sort of like what aspects of your life surprised you?
What different things that happened during my cancer journey. So I was married. I am not married anymore. There's a lot more to the story in the book, and some of the intricacies of our relationship while I was fighting cancer was surprising to me, that I just thought, I can't believe this is my life. I also can't believe, to think back, so the first time I met those other queens were, let's see, fall of 2017. So to think, if you had asked me 5 years ago, oh yeah, or told me, you're going to be going to drag shows all the time, these are going to be great friends of yours, I don't know if I would have, not that I wouldn't have believed you, but I just thought, how? I've never even seen a show in my life. So to go from never having seen a show to now this being a huge part of my life, that's a shock, but a good shock, great shock.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's like you're saying, I can imagine because like this is the thing, like it's one of those things when you kind of write in a book, especially a memoir, it's like okay, many different stages of someone's life. It's like yeah, it's like oh, I've been so never been so much alive until, and then a next stage kicks in, like basically birth of your first child. It's like oh my God, whoa, what the hell, like. The world is so much more. Birth of your second child. The world is so much more. Like, yeah, going through the motions, everything like this, and then the big C, cancer comes along, and like it's like, okay, wait a second, like things are not what I thought they were, and like what? Like it must be kind of hard to like, oh right, it's like okay, which way is my North Star? Which way do like which is what is the guiding light in my life? How did you manage to like find that again?
I think having children helps. That sounds probably strange, but I think, and I can't speak to someone who had cancer without children because I only had cancer with children, but I think, I wonder if I hadn't had them, if there might have been more of just crawling into a hole and falling into a bit more despair where I felt like I couldn't do that to them. Like I had to keep doing my best for them. So as long as they had a mom, they still had a mom. So I think just, and taking it one day at a time for sure. And that is not my nature. I am a planner with a capital P, and I love to think months in advance and maybe even longer than that. But then facing this diagnosis where every day can be different and you don't know from a treatment perspective and how your body's going to be doing, and almost everything is up in the air, that it's one day at a time to think, okay. And especially now, I'm really just focusing. I'll know things in advance, and I do have some things planned a few weeks out, which is great. But day by day, it's okay, what's today? I'm going to do my best today. I'm going to give, I work full time. So I have a full time job, not related to my book or anything else. So I have a full time job. I have my two teenagers. I want to keep track and keep up with my friends. So just trying to keep all of those plates spinning and not drop them all.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. Because like this is the thing, like keeping plates spinning is one thing, but like time, like basically using that as effectively as possible. Like, look, this is like one of the things I would say 2020 helped. I would say with a number of people, hence where you got like, oh, the great resignation, and like people like moving and go, I'm finding my purpose and doing this. It made it a lot more prevalent that yeah. Our time is finite to a lot of people, and that will gradually fade as we move each month, year away from the 2020, 2021. But to have it sort of like, okay, yeah, in your face, like so in your face, personally, just like, yeah. It's not something you can like go, okay, I can shut off the TV and yeah, look out of the window. And like they say, the world's burning on the TV, and I look out and it's a serene day. You turn off the TV, you still got it. You like walk into a quiet room, you still got it. And it's a weird passenger, as you will. Like, Like, how did that sort of help? Did that help focus you in any way? Or was it a case of you were like, okay, you mentioned like not crawling into the hole as far because of your kids, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and don't get me wrong. Some days I crawled in a hole a bit. And some days I cried a lot. And for me, that's important. And I think I was aware of it a little bit then, but now I really know that I have to go with my emotions in that if I am starting to feel upset, and I am a very, very emotional human being, if I'm starting to feel upset, of course, if I'm on a professional work call or something, I can manage to hold it together. But then whether it's a little while later or even an hour later, I need to let myself feel that feeling. And so I was actually talking with my therapist about this once that I was, and a lot of times it's not even just one thing. It's a bunch of little things that keep adding up. And then the one more little thing and you're just ready to break. And so that happens. And I was just really upset. And of course, now I don't even remember what it was about at all, but I knew I just felt upset and I needed to get it out. So I knew I was going to cry, but then I just took it another step further and I found a playlist. I just searched and found a playlist of movie soundtrack love songs.
Movie soundtrack love songs.
Oh, just like the romantic-y ballads. And so I just listened and just cried and cried and cried. And then I feel better.
Would you say it's helped make you be a lot more honest with who you are as a person?
1,000%. I'm at the place in my life now where I have no room for being inauthentic or hedging around corners and tiptoeing. My patience for that every day gets less and less and less. I just need to be me, and the people who accept me and love me and want me to be me, great. The others, okay, I'll be pleasant, but you're not my people.
It must be one of those things where, okay, like while going through this sort of battle and everything like this, it's always, how can I put it? It's always one of those things where you kind of get a you had a reality check with your husband, but you get a reality check with everyone because, you know, the term fair weather friends and everything like this. And like I would say sometimes you're like, oh yeah, before something like any sort of situation like this, you're like, oh yeah, we are so tight. We're like family and everything like this. Got our backs 100%. And when the shit hits the fan, as they go, like, did it surprise you which people stepped up to the plate rather than stepped away? Like, that sort of distant friends, you're like, going, you're an acquaintance, but then when they heard, you're like, oh my God, you're a fierce champion. Like, helping me.
Yes, I definitely had that. So I had both in that I wasn't surprised by my best friend. She has been just my rock for years. You know, I'm an auntie to her children. She's an auntie to mine. We've been friends for years. She knew about my diagnosis before anybody else did. And she was there for me across the board, day one. So that didn't change, but that didn't really surprise me because we'd been through so much together already. But yes, some of the acquaintances that stepped up, I thought, oh, wow, you're really here for me. And it's amazing and wonderful. And I'm so grateful to those people.
I hear you. Like, it must be like, thank you.
One certain people, I think their ability to handle really raw honesty, some people can really, really handle it and some people can't. And there are times where someone could say, how you're doing? Oh, pretty good. You know, treatment's going all right. And you can kind of just brush by. And you find that that's just the best in that moment. But then there are some that if you want to be really, really honest, they just really can't handle it. And I don't fault them for it. It's just, that is not one of their gifts and talents. So I feel like I've since learned over time, you know, who are the ones that can hear everything? And who are the ones that maybe you'll just kind of brush by the details?
But this is the thing, like, even though we've just met now for a few minutes, you strike me as a person, yes, who would say, if like this is going on, that you would say, like, go right, you'll be totally like authentic, honest, and like, yeah, you'd be like, okay, yeah, this is how my day is going. And yeah, please, like, you might go, please understand why I might not be X, Y, or Z, and might be A, B, or C, like, A, B, or C. Like, and you're just like, okay, great. But I have known people who have, like, going through their own sort of battle with, like, the big C and stuff like this. And, like, they take on this stance of, okay, I must be stoic, I must be strong, when it's just a case of, I get that, but how am I going to help you if you don't actually say anything? How am I going to be there when you need something if you don't say anything? And but then some weeks or months down the line, it's like, yeah, no one was there for me. And you're like going, damn it, you didn't freaking say anything. You like decided to be this closed shell. And like, you know what I mean? Open up. I don't get it myself, if you get what I mean.
It's a delicate, delicate balance, because being in the patient's shoes, there are times where you feel like, I don't want to burden people. I don't want to ask for help. I can handle this. And I've had to work and really almost learn to accept help, because I am by nature very independent, often very stubborn. So I got this. I can do it myself. It's hard to either ask for help or receive it.
Yeah.
But then sometimes I've just gotten knocked down hard enough and thinking, okay, I do need help. And then talking with some really wise people, a good friend of mine who also had cancer. And so we have similar journeys, and had said, give me these words to say, let people love you. I thought, oh, because the people who care for you, if they're asking to help you, if they're saying they want to help you, they do.
Yeah.
That's what they're saying. They're saying they want to help. That is how they're going to show you they love you. So it's almost like you're doing them a disservice by not allowing them to help you.
Mm. Like being a strong, independent lady, like, yeah. How long did it take those words to seep in to the, how can I say, the fibers of your mind to like help soften your stance?
Embarrassingly long. I would say years, probably. Well, I will say I accepted friends' help, certain friends, you know, like my best friend, I was more ready and able to accept that help. But then maybe others, or people who weren't as close friends, or maybe more acquaintances, I think that took longer.
Right. Is it a case of, yeah, you didn't want the perception of you to be sort of damaged in their eyes or something like that?
No, I think it was more that I know that we all are going, we collectively, the royal we, are all going through a lot. I can think of any friend that if you really, really talk to them, they're probably going through maybe something hard at work. Maybe they're going through a divorce. Maybe something really challenging with children. Maybe multiple things all at the same time. So to think, yes, I have cancer, but it's not like I'm the only one going through something hard. A lot of people are all going through something hard. So that thought of, they have their own hard things to deal with. I don't want to be a burden. Like, I'm adding more hard things, or like more work or more effort, or something to do on top of whatever they're trying to manage in their own life.
No, I understand that. I hear where you're coming from, but like, yeah, it's just, I think sometimes you're right in what you're saying, but I do like believe if you did say, this is what's going on, and like, you know what I mean, being authentic and truthful about it, people might like, oh, I've got all of this stuff going on in my life, but yeah, you know what? Let me help like relieve some of that off of you. It might be 1%. It might be 2%. It might not be a large percentage, but if you've got a number of people which like do that, like that can easily turn to 20, 30%. And yeah, help you through those sort of dark days, which, you know what I mean, come on a regular basis, I can only imagine. Or like, yeah, help uplift you to a new height. You never know. But I say this not to just you, like being a survivor or like going through your cancer journey, but I say this to anyone who might be just going through life in general with like, hey, and mental problems, or like just like going through their basic problems, like, yeah, which get weighed down so much because people this day and age, we are so connected. We are connected, 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 but yet we are alone, so alone in so many cases. And it's sort of one of those things which it saddens me, because there is so many people around which could possibly help, but through sometimes pride, through like just fear, through a myriad of things, they don't take that step and go, hey, I need help, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's funny because I'm thinking about it now, and I can be so hypocritical, because I feel like, oh, I don't want to burden this other person and have them be helping me. But then on the same side, if I know that someone I find out after the fact that someone's going through something hard and they didn't tell me because they didn't want to dump on me, I'll actually get mad at the person and think, no, just because I have cancer, just because I'm going through whatever hard thing, I still want to be there for you. I still want to be available, and even if it's just listening. So I should take my own advice.
This is the thing. You know how it is. And doctors make the worst patients, and people which give out good advice often are the worst people to receive that advice in turn. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Too true.
So with this, with everything what's going on, how do you like people to refer to you as? Like, do you want them to hey, Jamie, the cancer survivor. Hey, Jamie, the author. Hey, Jamie, the designer. How do you see you?
I feel most connected to being an author right now. Mm-hmm. Mostly because of the feedback I've received from the book already. Mm-hmm. And just the people who have come to me and said amazingly kind things. But also because I feel like anybody could read my book and get something out of it. Whereas, the clothing line, it's a market within a market within a market. It's a very small group of people. And if I help one person, great. But the idea of my book, I can talk to anybody about my book and they at least have a chance that they could read it and enjoy it.
So I see. So you're basically now trying to reach out and touch and help as many people as you can with your message, your words at this present time.
Because I found it's been interesting, some of the people who have reached out to me, that it's not just about the cancer journey. Sure, it is about my cancer journey. Mm-hmm. It is about a marriage. It is about getting up each day. And it's also about drags. I think some people, whether they like drag, they might think it's fun to read kind of these stories because they are my friends. So I'm telling stories about my friends, this kind of inner, like you said at the beginning, like that peering in almost from the outside. Or they just, I don't know, want to break from life. And it's a book that I think could just be an escape from whatever they have going on.
Interesting. Escape for what's going on. And with this, trying to provide this escape, to provide this connection, a voyeur look into the world of drag, and maybe have a unique insight into marriage itself, the sort of ups and downs and everything like this. Has there been sort of one sort of common theme of feedback from the book?
I struggle with that answer because I will say I've heard inspiring a lot and I have a very hard time with that, although I'm getting better, because my book's inspiring, it feels very conceited. It feels braggadocious.
My book is inspiring.
Right.
They're inspired to go out and do greatness.
That is very hard for me to say, but I have had that feedback. So I'm trying to accept that and let it soak up and take it as a compliment, as a good thing. And if that's what it's doing for people, then wonderful.
Hey, Look, there must be power behind the words you have written down for people to like say that.
I guess, I don't know. It's just me being me.
Hey, you know what they say, with great power comes, I will not finish the line of that. But yeah, so with this, like the inspiring words of your book, like what, like, how can I put it? What would you say, like, people like, I'm inspired by it. Have you went, what has been the sort of key thing, what's inspired you? Has it been like, yeah, my marriage? Has it been like my journey? Has it been like, yeah, like, have they sort of like gone, yeah, this is the thing?
I can't speak for anybody who all the people have written, but I think the common theme is that perseverance of, wow, you got knocked down. You got knocked down again. You got knocked down again. And part of it is getting up. And I think also getting up and doing my best to be positive, to still be looking out for other people. I'm still trying to be the best mom I can be. I think people find it inspiring. Like, oh, you're going through all this garbage, but you're still going to drag shows and having fun and living your life and being joyful.
Like, this is like, this is the thing, like the saying of getting knocked down 8, getting up 9 comes to mind. And like, mm-hmm. This is the thing, like, I kind of like listen to you and go, yeah, no, that's what you're saying is very true and everything like this. But like, to be a practitioner of that and like basically your kids seeing this, like, would you say like it's kind of affected them, changed them slightly with like maybe their approach or like sort of attitude, or what is it? Were they too young and it's like, this is being it for them?
Well, they have a unique perspective. Even so, at my diagnosis before that, rewind, oh gosh, how many years? 5. Rewind 5 years. My brother had cancer and passed away. Yeah. So I think my initial diagnosis was, of course, really scary because their frame of knowledge was, well, he had cancer and then he died.
Yeah.
So their immediate thought of, are you going to be, how long are you going to live? So they had that perspective coming in. So unfortunately, they already had their own perspective on a cancer journey. But then I think once we dove in and, okay, we're going to do treatment. And I try really, really hard, as I said earlier, to not lean on them at all. And it's funny because there have been times that my older one will say, well, if you need anything, which is a very sweet thing to say, but I'm thinking, no, if I needed something, I would not ask them.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to lean on my friends. I'm going to lean on those maybe acquaintance who became greater friends, basically anybody but them. Not because I don't think they could step up, but just, I don't think that's not their responsibility. That's not what should be put on their shoulders.
Yeah.
So I think, I don't know how much is sinking in, but they see me living my life. They know that I'm in treatment and I'm going to go to a drag show that night. They see me going out with my friends. They just see me continuing to work, even though they're at school while I'm working for the most part. So I don't know what they're getting out of it, but I think it's probably helped for them to see people when life has thrown you some really hard stuff, you keep going.
Yeah. Because like, it's one of those things where like, it always makes me like laugh when I don't have kids myself, but it's like one of those things you like, I remember like aspects of being a kid, even though it's many moons ago, but it's like, yeah, parents think, oh yeah, I can hide stuff from my kids and like put it away. They won't see, but it's like, you're like, yeah, you're like, you're walking around with a living sponge, like they observe, mm-hmm. and they take it in, observe and take it in. And like, I'm always curious, like with regards to any, like anybody, when people see other people going through a time which is challenging, a time which like, yes, it's a battle on a daily basis, like, which, you know what I mean, that if you lose that battle, that is it is over, like how it might affect someone's psyche with regards to maybe like their sort of focus and like, yeah, drive, determination, because they are there, even though they're not going through the battle personally, they definitely got stakes in it, hey, I need to do more, or hey, I can't take this for granted, hey, what's the next thing, you know?
I do. Yeah, completely.
And would you say your kids are like, yeah, maybe a little bit more driven, a little bit more like, yes, let me seize the day type thing? Or like, would you just like say, yeah, no, you just...
I think more so the elder, but I think that's just the way they've been their whole lives. So whereas the younger, I think just wants to enjoy, wants a lot of joy, which I think is great, but not necessarily gets caught up in, I have to do this or I have to do this and I need to reach these levels. But so they're just different people. Regardless of my cancer journey, they're 19 and a half months apart, and you'd think they were raised the same way, that all these things. No, they're just different humans. Allowing them to be the different humans that they are.
Yeah, no, that's the thing what always fascinates me about kids. Like, yeah, same household, everything like this. And one's like, they walk in and like they just sit down, calm and everything like this. You're just like, oh, I didn't really notice you were there. And then you've got the other one, feral, running around, howling.
Like a tornado ripping through the room.
Yeah, yeah, it's like, what on earth? It's like, stop it, stop it. And you're like, oh, right, what did you do? And like, you just look at the parents like, oh, no.
Yeah, oh, no. They are who they are.
Oh, God, to love it. So with this, you're doing your author thing now and you're doing your speaking thing now. What do you want to say next, say 6 months to a year to like bring you personally? What would you like to do personally?
So it's hard. I've actually really taken that step back from thinking 6 months to a year out, not because I don't think I'll be alive, although you never know, but I don't plan as far into the future. But at the moment, I really just want to enjoy my life. And not that I didn't enjoy my life, but especially, so finishing my book, it was fairly awful, I will say. I did not love the editing process. Oh my God. I read the book out loud to myself, every single word, probably 4 times to make sure I didn't catch anything. You didn't want any errors. And it's different reading it on a screen versus reading it out loud. So I would read it to myself, but off the computer, yeah, at least 3, but I think 4 times. So, and other people have asked, oh, are you going to write another book? And I thought, I just don't know if I have it in me right now. So it's a possibility. And I do have a draft started. But I also just feel like I want to just live my life as opposed to, I feel like when you think of it from the terms of a writer, it's like you're living it, but then what, you get home at night after something happens and then you go write about it. And I'm thinking, I just want to go out, have that time, and then sleep.
Fair enough. Because this is a thing. Like, yeah, I agree. Because like, when you are writing a book, you are like, yes, you're writing, like if it's fact or fiction, like you are just going through, like you, like one, you're living the story, or two, you're making up the story. And yeah, it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of energy. And like, if you're not in love with the whole editing process, no. I think the fastest I've ever heard someone like go, yeah, I did a book. They went 2 weeks. I was like, oh my God, 2 weeks.
And she was, definitely not 2 weeks over here. No way.
She was like, yes, I was up doing 15-hour days. I was like, oh my God, I can do it.
No, just not what I want for my life.
Yeah.
But no, thank you. Alone,
yeah, reading a book 4 times out loud, that no,
it was mentally exhausting, and it was mentally and emotionally, and really not physically, in that, you know, wasn't picking things up and hard labor, but just staring at the screen and reading the words, that was physically challenging at times. But then emotionally, I was reading about my diagnosis, reading about some of the things in my head. So reading those things again, that was also, it was almost like, let me remind you of all this trauma you went through, which I knew I had went through it, but reading it again was a lot.
No, just, oh my Lord, reliving that again and again. Mm-hmm. Well, not reliving it once, twice, but 4 times.
Right, exactly.
part? Like, did, like doing that, going through that process, did you find it actually helped empower you? Or like, oh yeah, ah, now I remember, like, even though it was traumatic, you went, okay, these, like, ah, okay, I remember the sort of tools and techniques to overcome that moment. So was it helpful on that side of things, or did you just like go, nah, I'm sick of being beaten up with that?
It depended on the day, a little bit of both. Depended on the day, depended on the story. Some stories were just, oof, that was really hard, and I didn't love thinking about that again. But then some, maybe even minutes later, I thought, oh, that was really hard, but I'm still here. And so you do have that moment of, okay, I got through that. That was really awful. And I am here to tell about it. The most embarrassing, and I would tell one of my best friends this, when I was reading to myself and I would laugh and I thought, oh, I'm so funny.
Okay.
So I'm thinking, well, I hope other, and then you have this moment thinking, well, I hope other people think this is funny because I'm reading it and I'm thinking it's funny, but it's my own words, it's my own personality. So we'll see. Other people have said it's funny too. So it's at least a little funny.
No, that's good. That's good. It's at least it's not an inside joke of one.
No. It's not like that. Just the way I word things. Well, and I have said for a long time now that I cope with humor. I know that I do. So I am a person that might be in this awful situation and then I make that dark joke. It's a coping technique for me.
Well, like, you never know, like, yes, a dark comedy might come out of you.
Maybe. It's possible. Oh yeah, I love dark comedy. I love smart dark comedy. I think it's great.
So with this, like, okay, I know you're not planning in advance now, like you're just doing it one day at a time. What do you consider a good day or a great day?
Some days it's just we're all in one piece. So me and the two children are all in one piece when it's at the end of the day. Like, whew, okay, depending on the day, sometimes that's it. But in a bigger picture, a good day is that I connected with someone, whether it's a friend or someone through work, they just made a connection. Help them smile, help someone laugh. If I can do those things in a day, if I can do that every day, I think that's a good life.
Yeah. Would you say you're still actively sort of going out there, sort of connecting with people, like our fellow human beings, say, because, hey, you know what I mean? Like, the battle is the battle. And like, you're like, oh, time is time. Investing in new people sometimes is not sometimes, I wouldn't say it's going to be a high priority for some people in your circumstance, if you know what I mean.
It can be challenging. I feel that is for sure a challenge. And even just to work that in around having the full-time job and the kids. So I feel like sometimes you have your priority orders that, so I have my best friend, I've talked about her, and we talk every single day. It's amazing. We talk in the morning, pretty much before we both work. And that's just, it's been that way for so many years. So that is a priority. Around 8:30 in the morning, I am expecting her to call and we're going to talk until it's probably about time to go to work. So that high priority, that time is just for her. And then from there, it depends on the person. And I do think sometimes if someone reaches out to you, then you might make more, not more of an effort, but I think we're connected. Like you said, so connected. Hmm. But are we really deeply connected? And I'm more into the deeper connections than the surface ones. And I love being friendly with everyone. But if I have a choice, you know, if I look at two nights and it's, well, you can go to this event that's maybe you won't know anyone there. And I don't know, it's hard to explain, but something that you're not super duper connected to, yeah, versus
more wishy-washy, say.
Right. Just an event of some kind, but you're not really invested in it, versus that same night you want to get together with these three close friends of yours. I would definitely pick the three close friends always. So
yeah, I think that's one of the things where I think a lot of us tend to fail, because like, okay, I've said, anyone who's listened to this podcast most of these heard me say this before, because in life, and like we always hear it from like people who are older than us when we were kids, like, enjoy this moment while you have it, because once it's gone, it's gone. Because like in your sort of late teens, early 20s, like you go, we're going out. And you're like, oh, we are Legion. And you just have, oh, I was like, yeah. And away you go. You hit your 20s, you hit your mid 20s, late 20s. And like, yeah, we're going out. We are Legion. It's like, oh, it's still a roar, but it's like people have dropped off. And like when you get your when you get into your 30s and you're like, okay, we are Legion. And like the roar is like more like a rowdy crowd, not like and you're like, oh, it's like, okay, right. You hit your 40s and you're like, we are Legion. It's like no,
we're not.
We're a crack elite team of about 4 or 5 people. And it's like you're like, what happened to all the people I used to hang out with? What happened to all this grand group of people I didn't think I would miss one weekend, like being out with them, talking to them, chatting, like chewing the fat, talking nonsense, or just having a good time? And like, you know what I mean? Life gets in the way. It's just a case of, yeah, we grow up and we grow apart. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, so saying, yeah, having that, like come getting together with three friends, which you haven't spoken to for some time. I think there's many a person which still miss out on that sort of like, or forget that lesson. Meet up with the people you care about, the people who are precious to you on a regular basis, because you're not going to be able to do it all the time, you know?
Right. Absolutely. Mm. So very true.
Yeah. So I have to ask now, what brought you into the world of speaking?
An offshoot of the book. So that is starting very, very, very slowly. And also with COVID, because I would love to be doing more speaking. So that's also a possibility for the future. But factoring that in around a full-time job is also a challenge. Mm-hmm. So being available to speak to cancer support groups, to speak to LGBTQIA plus groups, kind of because the book can touch on so many different people and so many different realms of experiences. So that is really just the beginnings. So I'd love to see that grow, but one day at a time.
Yeah. I have to say, like when you say that, like the alphabet mafia, every time someone says it, like to me, it feels like it gets always like 2 words longer.
It has grown over time. That is definitely true.
But it's okay, right. So don't ask me to say it out loud, because I'll be like, okay, have I missed something? Have I like
got? No worries, I won't.
Yeah. But yeah, okay. So basically, yeah, speaking a little bit more in the future, going out there. So let me ask this. What has brought you sort of that air or realm of gratitude over the last, say, 6 months or a year?
My friends, the closest people in my life, just being there for me through everything is, I'm so grateful for them.
I like that because like this is the thing, I think many of us miss out on that sort of realm of gratitude because it's like you get caught up with other things in life, but you don't take that moment to go, I am grateful for this. I have this over not having this, that, the other. And like find that sort of true value in life. It's difficult, I would say, at times.
It can be. Absolutely.
Yeah, no, I hear you. So with all of this, which is going on, like if there was something you could really do tomorrow, you wanted to do, what would that one thing be?
To talk to Reese Witherspoon about my book.
Why Reese Witherspoon?
Well, first, I've just been enamored with her and her career for so long, but I also think her book club has done a lot for a lot of authors. So if she just read it and enjoyed it, lights out. I would expire on the spot.
Hopefully not.
Not really.
No. We need you here for
a turn.
Yeah, we need you here for a little bit of a long time. So yeah, Reese Witherspoon. Like, mm-hmm. What is your favorite Reese Witherspoon film? I have to ask.
Oh gosh, there's too many, but probably Legally Blonde. Like that was an iconic role. Her Elle Woods. That's classic Reese. But yeah, I think she's had an amazing career and has done so much over so long.
Yeah, like this is the thing. I do love Legally Blonde. I was surprised they didn't do Legally Blonde 3. Like the second one was like, okay, but I did like her in Cruel Intentions.
That's such a good movie. Yes, I also love that movie. That is another top one of hers.
Oh yes, mm-hmm. Like basically, if you watch that film, people out there, it is the soundtrack of the 90s in a very hard way. So yeah.
Yeah. Agreed. Mm-hmm. Well said.
Okay. Witherspoon's like book club. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we can get you on to that at some point at time.
Okay. Putting that out to the universe.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, final question I have to ask. Now, if you could change the world in one way, what would that be?
To make it more kind and loving.
How so?
Just all of us treating each other, both the people close to us, but also the larger circle, just to be more kind and more loving.
Okay.
And so I feel like if I'm doing that and I could, if me living that, see that or want to do that as well. And if I've inspired that, I have left a great mark.
Outstanding. Now, this is the thing. I would simply say this. I think you are poised to make many a great mark in this world, like from your book, Queen to Queen. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, that's going to make an impact in many a person's lives. And look, as the world is coming back into the realms of normality, apart from sort of geopolitical mm-hmm. things, which might lead to maybe a slightly colder world. Hopefully not. But yeah, I think it's a case of, yeah, I think there's going to be marvelous mm-hmm. opportunities. And look, I know you're still fighting the good fight, as you will. And yeah, one day you'll overcome, sure.
Thank you for that. Most appreciated.
No worries. Can you tell the lovely people out there how they can find you out on the interwebs?
Yes, the two best ways are my website, ydysweets.com. So it's just ydysweets.com. Yep. You can read about the clothing line. You can see where you can get my book. And you could also reach out to me there. And then the other is Instagram, @JamieSherling. You just have to spell my name right. So if you spell Jamie and Sherling right, you'll find me.
Perfect. Perfect. I'll put all of the information to the show notes, the description, so they can find you out there.
Thank you.
Lovely people out there. Jamie, I'll have to say thank you for coming on today. You have been a star, absolute legend. I look forward to speaking to you again in the future and maybe for a little bit longer next time. That's another story. Oh, I think she's
another story for another day. Love it. Thank you so much for having me. This was wonderful.
Not a problem. And I'd like to say thank you to you, my friends, my life warriors, who have stuck with us up until this point. Please stay safe, stay well, be awesome, be excellent, be fantastic. Be all the positive bees you can be in this world and then some. Have a great day, guys. Peace and love to you. Yeah. And we are...